Hey, readers and writers. This episode was recorded with Squadcast, a web-based software that records studio-quality episodes from anywhere in the world. Squadcast records at each user's end and then uploads it to the cloud, so even if the call quality wasn't great at the time, the end file is always perfect. So that's a good thing. And it's never lost, which is even better. It's a paid service, so there is that. But for me, it's been worth it. If you're in the market for recording software, there's a link in the show notes to get a free trial. Now let's get on with the show. Hi, Harker. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm sorry. I caught you in a sip of water.
No, that's fine. I don't need more. It's just kind of like that. Yeah.
Just something to keep busy with.
Right. Kind of, yeah.
So, how about you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Great. Well, my name is Harker Jones, and I'm an author and screenwriter. I live in LA. I've been here for about 20 years. I grew up in Michigan on a dirt road outside a very small town that is so small it still doesn't have a traffic light to this day.
Oh my goodness. Away.
Not even.
That is so small.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird because I'll reference something like, oh yeah, something about in a movie or whatever, like, oh, that's way bigger than my town. People are like, what? And I'm like, have you not listened to what I told you about my tavern? It's fine. It's small. It's charming. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy necessarily growing up there, but now that I've been gone for so long, it was a really nice launching pad. It was really solid, mm-hmm. and it helped.
Like wholesome.
Right. It was very wholesome. Yes. It helped prep me to take, you know, the step to Ann Arbor. We were just 20 minutes outside Ann Arbor. So there was also okay. that. I grew up in a lake. So I was in between, 20 minutes between Manchester and 20 minutes to Ann Arbor. And okay. so I also had that access. And so it was like a stepping stone to Ann Arbor, which then led to LA. You know, like steps mm-hmm. into bigger.
right.
But yeah, so I grew up there and I started writing and I was like 13, angsty, writing poetry. You know, and during COVID, I went through boxes and I found, you know, my time to go through boxes. I could read stuff. And, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it was brilliant, but it wasn't bad considering I was an angsty 13-year-old, you know?
It wasn't bad for the age range, age bracket.
Right. I did feel like I embarrassed myself.
I mean, yes, there is the inherent embarrassment because you were 13 right. and whatever, right. but yeah, so you had the jobs.
Myself from that, it's like, well, you know, this isn't terrible. Anyway, mm-hmm. so I wrote my first novel at 17, a slasher.
That is so impressive. 17.
Yeah, I was bored. I mean, the town was so small. do I miss those boring days? Not necessarily, but I mean, it's nice. It happens when you're that age period, I think. There's just more time. Mm-hmm. It's just, the time goes slower. So kind of mm-hmm. envy that, because now it goes so fast. All
Einstein's theory of relativity.
If I don't do anything all day, it goes just as fast as the days where I'm racing around doing getting stuff done. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was bored, so I wrote a novel, and then I wrote my second novel, a love story called Until September, when I was like 24, I guess. And then I didn't write anything for a really long time. I just wasn't inspired to.
Okay. It happens to the best of us.
Right. And I didn't feel like it was writer's block. I mean, writer's block is if I try to push it and nothing's going on. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. I guess, you know, I'll be inspired when I'm inspired. So I just went about my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. I tinkered with Until September off and on. I mean, I was working on it, but certainly not aggressively. Mm-hmm. And then I was came to LA and I didn't come here to write screenplays at all. I just always kind of felt like I should be here, like this was the place for me. And it is. And okay. everything fell right. into place once I got here. So I was right. At one point, I remember I was at the gym and I was just disgusted with society, as one is. And I was like, I'm going to write a screenplay about this. And so I did. And it just kind of started me on the screenwriting track. And I've been doing that ever since. And then obviously I really polished Until September and got that out there. And
That is actually what we're talking about, is until September. I want to say your first book, but it's not, because you already wrote the one when you're 17. But
right. But I know,
your first major one.
Yeah. It's the first one I actually did anything with. And it's I'm getting good reviews from people. You know, some people are really good.
That's good.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, it's not, I knew from the beginning it wasn't going to appeal to everyone, because nothing does. Just across the board, nothing does. So I'm going to get a couple of, you know.
Oh my God, if you found something that appealed to everybody, you would be a billionaire.
Right. I'd be J.K. Rowling.
Right.
But not offensive.
See? She doesn't appeal to everybody.
That's true. So I took a class on self-publishing. So I don't know. And became friends with the woman teaching it, and she just really helped, and she put me in touch with someone who could do the cover. And Angie from Fiverr was so good. She got exactly what I wanted. And, you know, you can send it back and forth.
Oh, that's so nice when that happens.
Right. And just like, try this font instead, or maybe pull this down, whatever. And so she's understood. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. And then you have to get it laid out, because I'm not a graphic designer, though I have worked in publishing my whole life. I don't deal with the design aspects. And so I launched it, and I've sold 1,200 copies. And to me, that's outrageous, nice. Because I'm the only one promoting it. And I'm not always promoting it. When I am, it's just a couple of dollars a day, because it's not like I'm getting rich off of it yet.
Right.
So yeah, 1,200 copies. I've gotten fan letters. It's really sweet.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh
my God, it just blows my face off every time. I just, you don't. It never occurred to me I would get one. Never occurred to me to think about it one way or the other. And they just pop up in my email.
That is so amazing. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Is that every author's dream, is to hear from somebody who's their work, like, touch them?
Right. Right.
That's what we all want. We want, I don't know. I don't, maybe that's not what we all want, but I think a large portion of us want that.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to get rich as well. Don't get me wrong. But that also means, if I'm getting rich, that means I touched a lot of people. You know what I mean?
So, right.
It's just touching more people. Yeah, I mean, how often, when's the last time you sat down and wrote a letter to an author? You might follow them on Instagram or something, you know, but like, sit down and type out an email. It's just, it blows my mind.
I have to admit, I've only done it once in my life, and I was a kid then. I mean, I've never done it as an adult.
Right. Last time I was an adult, but I was about 22. I wrote to Michael Chabon, Mr. Spencer, Cavalier and Clay, and all that. And he wrote back to me. It was an email.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Just a quick thing, and it was very sweet. That's the last time I did it. Even when I love it. When I love it, I don't think about it. I don't know.
Right.
It's astonishing.
So it's amazing that people are contacting you about your book. Because people don't do that these days.
Right. It's very moving, and it's totally unexpected. And it's the most meaningful thing that's happened with me so far. I am going back to my hometown in September. And I contacted the library to see if they would stop.
Did you like make that like specific? It had to be in September because the title was in September.
No, it was mostly checking airfares. Changing.
Well, at least it worked out that way. I mean,
yeah, it worked out. It's a good time to be in Michigan in September. You know, better than LA, but it's still, you know, really hot. But yeah, so I contacted the library. I said, hey, would you, you know, stock my book, local author, you know, used to be local author kind of thing. And she was like, oh my God, of course. And she's like, well, will you come in and sign the book next time you're in town? And I was like, absolutely. So I let her know. I said, hey, I'm coming to town. And then she emailed me back, and she's like, well, the book club would like to have a discussion with you about your book. I was like, oh my God.
Awesome. That's so nice.
And so I was like, wow, okay. So I guess I better think of something to say. And then I asked her something, and she was just like, well, you know, it's okay. Just tell us what your program is. I was like, program? Like, you all wanted to do, you suggested it. I don't have a program. So I didn't say this, of course, because it's very sweet.
Like, right.
And so I came up with a program, just a bulleted list. And I had to find like an excerpt to read that I thought exemplified the book without giving anything really away. Mm-hmm. I think I found it. I think it works. So I just need to like read it. Obviously, I'm familiar with all of it, but I'm going to be really familiar with it just so the rhythms come naturally when I read out loud, because I've never read out loud before. Anyway, that's also very sweet. And the lovely paper did a story on me, not the book. It's very sweet.
This is all very adorable.
I didn't ask for any of this, so it makes it more. I mean, I'm out there working it, like, hey, will you carry my book in your bookstore? Like, I'm always doing stuff, you know, working the angles. But some things just come to me, and it's really flattering.
So I want to back up just a second, just a tick. So am I understanding this right, that you wrote this during COVID?
No, I wrote it 20 years ago.
Well, I mean, yes, I get that you wrote it before, but you polished it. You brought it back out and rewrote it in COVID, right?
No. When did I really polish it? I guess.
I mean, like, edit it. Like, did you do any work on it recently?
Well, I published it in 2019. So this isn't new, though I am
still. Okay. I'm so sorry. I was under the impression that this was you said you were like you had time to read during COVID. And I just connected some dots.
Oh no, I got to go through old like papers and stuff from boxes.
I'm seeing the path now. Yes.
Yeah, because you know, being a writer, like I wrote a lot, so and a little bit of a background. I saved a lot, so I had time to go through them and actually read the stuff that I'd saved, and you know, some of it was good and some of it was terrible. College stuff was even terrible,
right?
But yeah. So no, but a lot of the what do you call it? The plate spinning happened through COVID.
Okay. So yeah, you did a lot of the marketing in the COVID thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just connected some dots that I thought were connected, and it turns out they weren't
all the time. And I've done it. Like, oh yeah, I've done the same thing.
So let's talk about Until September. Is it autobiographical, fictionalized, ?
It's,
tell me about it.
Okay, it's a love story about a boy who the year between high school and college, he's wealthy, he's smart, beautiful, he's kind. And he summers the same year on the same island with the same group of friends. And that year between high school and college, there's a new boy on the island, and he falls hopelessly in love with him. And this sets off a series of devastating consequences that threaten their future. And they realize they have only until September to salvage what they have left.
Okay.
So no, it is not autobiographical.
Okay.
Except it. I was going through a bout of unrequited love and put all of those feelings into the book. The love interest kind of looks like the boy I was crushing on.
I don't think I would call this autobiography. I mean, everybody does that. You always interject a piece of your life into your fiction.
Exactly. So no, it's not. To me, I wasn't wealthy growing up. You know, I didn't summer the same island, the same friends, sadly. You know, I didn't go to boarding school. I wasn't en route to Princeton. So basically, it's all my life. And in my head, I never named the island. I didn't realize this till like 6 months ago. It just hit me. It's like, oh. I never named it. I never thought about naming it. It wasn't.
Well, that way, it just nobody can find it. It just doesn't exist.
Well, I liked it too because originally it takes place in 1966. Originally, I never gave a specific time because I wanted it to be timeless. But it threw an editor off enough. It's like you should put some small like oblique references to things to give it some kind of.
Okay, like car models or stuff like that.
It's like, okay. And I think it helps. So he was right. But because kind of like, I wanted it to be timeless, where it's not anchored to any specific time, specifically.
Mm-hmm. So you don't get caught up in that.
Right. And they're like in a bubble, because A, they're wealthy. So world events mm-hmm. aren't necessarily affecting them like they are other people. And they're on the island. So it's really just a bubble for them most of the time, because 85% of it, I would say, maybe more, takes place on the island itself that summer.
Okay.
So I never specify where it is. To me, it was always kind of off the coast of the Carolinas, but people have talked to me enough about it, and it's odd, because like, oh, clearly it's East Coast, like, you know, Massachusetts or something. Uh-huh. I'm like, that kind of makes sense now that you say it. but I've also, my point is, I've never really been to any island, any portion of the East Coast. So now I just made it all up as I went.
Pretty good. If people are saying they can clearly see it someplace.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's very vivid. Mm-hmm. I see it very vividly. Of course, see their stuff so vividly until someone's like, mm-hmm. "Oh, what about this?" Like, oh, well, that's. It's like, oh, I thought that was clear, and it's not. That happens all the time. As an editor, yeah. I point this out to writers all the time, because they'd be like, "Am I missing something?" Uh-huh. Sometimes I'm like, "Maybe I forgot," because you don't edit the whole book mm-hmm. in one sitting, you know.
Right.
And so I'm like, "I'm helping do a search. I can't find any keywords." And then like, oh, like, which is fair. I mean, it happens. You know, it happens.
Yeah. I mean, you get in your own head sometimes and you just forget right. that you haven't spelled this out. I mean, that is a constant battle for me as a writer.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is trying to figure out, did I, well, no, I guess the constant battle is, did I spell this out so the reader understands, and did I not spell it out too much that they're bored by it?
Right. Or that you're belaboring the point. Right. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And sometimes, like, this is screenwriting too, because that's just the bare bones, mm-hmm. you know, of the story. Because then the set designer, the costumer, and the composer, and obviously the director, the editor, the mm-hmm. actors, they all fill in, put all the meat on the bones.
Right.
So it has to be very, very tight. And sometimes, you know, you have like two or three words to describe who the character is. And do you find a lot of screenwriters describe what they look like when it doesn't
Ooh,
matter?
Really?
Oh, she's
loved. Yeah, because it's going to be cast by someone that you might not even know.
Right.
It's weird.
And they're going to cast who they think is the best fit for the role. Ideally.
Right.
You know, who knows what favors are being pulled sometimes. But, uh-huh. but yeah, they're going to cast who they think is the best actor for the role. And unless it matters that he's blonde, it doesn't matter that he's blonde. Unless it plays.
Unless it's a plot point. Unless it. The character needs to be blonde for whatever reason, like his hair turns black. Right. I don't know. I'm making something right. up. But yeah.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's part of the plot. If not, it doesn't matter. It's more important that we find out, you tell us that he's stoic or that he's frivolous. Mm-hmm. Like that tells us something about who the character is. The point mm-hmm. is, you only have a couple of words usually, maybe four, to really. So right. you can do more. It depends how it's written or whatever. But like, mm-hmm. you know, three or four words to tell an actor and the director who this character is. Whereas with a book, you have to do all that. You have to compose the score and do the editing and put them in the room. And, all and then, of course, you do describe what they look like, because you're also the casting director. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and does it matter or not? No, maybe, probably not. But, but you have to paint the picture. You know, the mm-hmm. reader is the viewer. They have to see it. You have to tell them all this, what they're
right.
You know, what the beach house looks like. If it's a cloudy day, mm-hmm. does it matter if it's a cloudy day? No, but it sets the scene.
Right. Right. So they can picture the little bits of
right.
it. Since you're a screenwriter, have you thought about turning your book into a screenplay?
I did, and I realized I couldn't. So I turned it into a limited series.
Okay.
7 episodes. It's done. I mean, it's easy to say that. I've literally had people read the first episode and gotten feedback, and they quite liked it. But very positive feedback. But I haven't gone over any of the others. I just finished episode 7, the last one, like 2 weeks ago, a week ago.
Okay.
So awesome. I need to get feedback and polish it, refine it.
Uh huh.
But yeah.
How many planned episodes are you thinking about?
7.
Oh, 7 out of 7. Nice.
Yeah, and then it's just done. And, you know, thank God limited series are a thing, because It's like, oh, well, people want more. No, not necessarily. And there isn't more. Mm-hmm. It ends. I find that with literally everything I write, which is not a conscious choice, I don't write in terms of series or sequels. And I don't know why. I'm open to sequels, I guess. If I really like the first movie, if the first movie is high, and I'm done. And I don't always need a second season. It's like, I'm out. I thought like Russian Doll, which I loved the first season, but I thought that ended with such finality. I was just like, oh, okay, well, they're done. I like that it was just one and done. Then they wanted that
person. I am right there with you.
I did not need a second season, so I just didn't watch it. Mm-hmm. And I wish them well. I really liked the first one. I just didn't need more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was such a good singular bite, and it just didn't. I'm with you in that camp. Yes,
and again, I liked it. So it's not well, that wasn't good enough. I'm not watching more. It's just like I had my fill.
Right, it was excellent. I love this. Top 20 or something.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, so at one point it's like, yeah, it's 7 episodes and it's done. Like, it's like, I don't know how I could possibly do a second season. If, I mean, I could tell the same story from someone else's point of view, I guess, but no one wants that.
So are you mainly doing, so walk me through this. Are you an editor and a screenwriter and a novelist on the side? How's this working?
Well, I'm an editor, a development editor for a publishing company right now.
Okay.
Double Four. And that is my day job. And then I do everything else. And I can set my own hours. So that's great. Mm-hmm. So I'm really great. So I can work on scripts and I can go to meetings and script reads.
Okay.
And do marketing.
Because like you threw out that you like you edit, and I'm like, whoa, I didn't know he was an editor.
Yeah. And so that when people are like, there wasn't one error in your script. I'm like, well, that's because I'm an editor. It doesn't mean there's going to be flawless every time, but the odds are it'll be cleaner than that of a writer who's not an editor. They're just different muscles. Mm-hmm. They're similar, but they're different.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But yeah, I've been an editor for like 20 years now.
Yeesh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was...
How do you like developmental editing? How's that float your boat?
I'm liking it a lot. It's also just working a different muscle compared to copy editing or proofreading. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the bigger picture. You're not getting mired in punctuation or, you know, continuity. Well, not maybe continuity. Right. Continuity in terms of tense, necessarily, if they shift from past to present. Like, you might fix that, but that's not what you're looking for. Like, can you make sure that the characters land and that they're fulfilling the promises of the manuscript and that they're in the right beats? And is the energy there? Is the plot moving in the right, with the right pacing? Like, it's kind of energy too. And so it's really interesting and it's really fun. And I'm so glad we were in a meeting. I don't know how it came up. I'm sure I was saying something about something. And I was glad to see that the other editors were like, it takes more time to copy everything. I was like, thank God. It takes me more time too. But I was like, every word, you know, you have to make sure it's spelled right. And, you know, the punctuation and just everything about it. And I'm thinking, should it be taking this long for me? So it was good to have someone else confirm without me asking for it. Not without asking them that it can take longer.
I would imagine you have to read the whole base of work, I don't know, at least twice, I would say, just to, I don't know, make sure you're getting everything.
Right, and then take notes on everything, and sometimes you have to make notes and then go back to them, because you're like, well, does this make sense? And then it makes sense later. I'll leave notes in the thing, not just to add later, because I'm like, I want to forget. Like, if this lands later, ignore this, but just in case, I need to find this out. I tell them going in, like, whether it's very solid or whatever, because really my job is to point out what doesn't work, which sucks to get that back from someone. You know, they understand that, but it still sucks to hear.
Right.
She should be more like this. And, you know, when he does this, it should be more like this. You know?
Right.
But we're all working toward the same goal.
Is there any interest in going back and writing another novel?
I've gotten some letters and some reviews about like, I read whatever you write next. I can't wait to read what you write next. I'm like, well, I wrote a slasher movie, you know?
Right.
It's so dramatic and different from Until September, which is kind of a bleak love story. Like, this is a romance mm-hmm. novel. You know, this is, I'm going to say literature, that's really grandiose. But I mean, it's not romance. That's its own thing. It's fine. But you know, before mm-hmm. you open the cover,
romance is not grounded in reality.
Right. That's a fantasy, which is right. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. People read it to get out of their own lives.
Absolutely. This is not that. So just things like, oh, I wrote a slasher movie, wrote a really raunchy comedy, you know. But so I didn't have any, really don't have any intention of writing another novel at this point. Okay. Kind of like when I wasn't writing anything at all. It's like, I'll be inspired when I'm inspired. So we'll see what happens.
Right.
But I'm writing children's books. And my goal, I've got three completed, one with illustrations, breaking down the pages left and right and which illustrations will go where. Because I already have them throughout the ones I want. Okay. But maybe I need another one for this page. Because there should be an illustration for each one. It's so much more complicated than it sounds. Oh my God, it's on my list. Like, I have to do that now. Uh-huh. I want to publish this before the end of the year. And and I'm in a group about it. So like, this is my goal. The hell's, you know, it's good to have a goal. Good to have a deadline.
Mm-hmm. So, right. You got to give yourself deadlines or you don't get any work
right, done. Exactly. And so I'm hoping to get that done. It's about a bird who's afraid to fly. And we get that published by the end of the year. And then I have the next one. It's called Violet's Pretty Purple Playground. The little girl. Violet. She loves purple so much. And she wishes for the world to be purple. And because she wants it so much on her birthday, that it comes true. And then she realizes, you know, the beauty and, I know diversity is really overused, but diversity and the beauty and difference and red is important because of this, and yellow is great because of this. If everything's the same, nothing special, etc.
Okay. So don't tell my 6-year-old that, because she would believe that everything would be perfect if it was pink.
It was pink. Yes. Pink is beautiful. Pink is beautiful.
Pink is that kid's favorite color, and I'm pretty sure that she would be completely okay if the entire world was pink.
I kind of think it's okay if the whole world is purple. It is me. I at least for a while.
A day, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Brown is beautiful. Gray, I'd miss some of the color. But anyway, yeah. So that is where I'm going next, and then I have a third one about the corn and colorful corn. That is the third one. So that's the one I built the least work on. I probably did three edits. I don't remember already. But the main one is The Bird Is Afraid to Fly. So I'll be doing children's fiction after doing this very adult and gay love story. Not adult in terms of graphic sex or anything.
Right. But as in like older people read it. Yes.
Right.
It doesn't have illustrations.
Right. Exactly. They tell people it's about teenagers. Like 98% of it. But it's not young adults. Young adults could read it. That's something I would have read at 14. I was also reading far above my age level at 14. Mm-hmm. And but it's not young adults. Which is, young adult is great. I read it all the time. It's just isn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, quick question. Do you have an illustrator for the children's books, or are you doing the illustrating?
I'm not doing illustrating because I can't do anything like that at all. I've done pitch decks for.
Well, oh my goodness. You're like, you're a scriptwriter, you're a novelist, you edit, you do this, you do that. And I have to ask, do you also illustrate?
And no, I can't to draw it all. I've done the paint and sip things twice.
Yeah.
And
those are so much fun.
It's fun, but I'm so bad. That people can't, you know, you're like, oh no, it's fine. It's fine. People are nice and supportive. People can't even drum that kind of support up. Is it?
Oh my goodness.
I'm really embarrassingly bad.
So you have an illustrator.
I have an illustrator. Her name is Sarah Angus, and I met her in college. And I thought she'd be good for this. And she is. She totally got it. She totally got it. Her mm-hmm. illustrations are just stunningly beautiful. And
that's awesome. Gave
feedback like, oh, well, can we make it more like this? Because I could do that in the first place. And oh my gosh, Charles, do it again. And like, you can just do that again. Like, to me, like, not you got lucky, but like, that was, that's like perfection.
Right, right. Yeah.
Because I'm like, how do you edit something like this? This has been all colored in and everything, painted. But she can. I don't know how. She's done a great job. It's been working with her. I need this one. I really need to get the page layout figured out for the book so that I can make sure that I have enough of them and so she can fill in those blanks.
Right.
So, yeah, and she's very good. She's very good. I think she's going to do the Violet book too. I haven't talked to her about Henry's Horn, the Unicorn book yet, just because that's far enough back that we'll get to it eventually.
Right. So you're doing the marketing for Until September all by yourself, right?
Yes.
Okay. What I know, a lot of our listeners are also writers, and they're going to want to know, what's the best way you found to do that? Like, what's your favorite way? What's the way that's getting the most results?
I've had the best results, I would say, on Amazon. Just running an Amazon ad. And, you know, it fluctuates. It depends. It's a book that takes place over the summer. It's called Until September. So, you know, also into the autumn a little bit. But so sales, like, in the winter aren't as strong. So I don't.
Okay, so is it like being purchased as like a beach read or something?
Yeah, that's kind of how I try to do it. Like, oh, Kyle's classic summer. You know, you only get so many words, which makes it really difficult.
Right.
But yeah, and then it spikes a little bit over Valentine's Day because it's a love story. But so there's that. Figure out what works best for you. But a lot of that is trial and error. You run the campaign and see, oh, nothing sold in March or nothing sold in August. Now you know.
There goes that money.
Right. Oh, God, 100%. I did a BookBub ad, and it was, oh God, it was India, Australia, England, Canada, someplace else. I don't remember where. Maybe it was all over the UK. I don't remember. That really spiked sales a lot. You have to apply and be approved. They didn't approve me for the U.S. market yet. I've tried twice. And they say, like, you know, only like 15% or 8% or whatever get approved. So I wasn't surprised. It's always a letdown. Any no is a letdown. And, but it's also pricey. I was talking to my friend who helped launch the book. And I was like, I looked into that. Why didn't I do it? I was like, oh, yeah, it costs $400. That's why I didn't do it. But like, you'll recoup that. Okay. And if you just break even, it's also the exposure of it. And if you break even, depending on what your book, you know, costs, you've sold a lot at that point. And so when I did it, with all the other markets that I named except for the US, it did spike a lot and it did break even.
Nice.
And a lot of it is to get reviews. It's important to make sure you get reviews and ratings on Amazon if you're going to be on Amazon, because it spikes the algorithm. So all of a sudden your book will pop up in searches where it might not have, with fewer reviews, that kind of thing. It's slow going. It's really slow going. My friends, I'm like, you don't even have to read it. In a review, just write it. Well, I'm not really a writer. I'm like, just write it. Just do it. And I don't really say it like this to them. And not all of my friends, but like the really good ones, it's like, just do it. You don't even have to buy it. You know, I'll give you
a copy for free.
I'll give you a copy. Yes. And obviously it's better if they read it. I don't mean to like, we try to like, I don't think anyone has lied. As far as I know, what the people who have actually done it have read it. And I'm so flattered every time someone actually has, because it's a thing. Like, here's my 400-page novel. You're like, oh, right. No, what now? You know, I have to read your novel. You know, it's hard enough to get someone to read a screenplay, which is like 100 pages. That is not just text the whole way through. This is not a white space, you know, in a screenplay. It's hard enough to get someone to do that. Anyway, so it's hard and slow going to get the reviews and the ratings. Mm-hmm. And you'll get more ratings, starred ratings, and more reviews. What can you do? Goodreads is important as well. I have a presence in putting it. I try to get there as much as I can. A little over half, now I'm thinking about it, than Amazon, which is it's kind of surprising. I didn't realize there were that many. So I just did math in my head. And my friend said it was like I have a 4.24 or something like that. And he's like, that's really good. Because these are the people
that is good.
Really care about books and reading, writing versus Amazon, where it can be a lot more, which is not a diss to people who are buying on Amazon, but like it's casual, more casual readers.
Right.
Like, oh, that's good to know because I got a 4.24. I guess that's good. Kobo, I did a Kobo thing, a giveaway, and that I moved like it was a giveaway though. So I mean, hey, it's free. I'll take one, you know, kind of thing. But also,
but that's exposure. I guess people talking about it, and hopefully a review and stuff.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's nothing out of my pocket to do this. It's like free advertising, essentially. So right. Kobo was really good. I just ran one like 2 days ago. And I can't remember what it's called. I think it was BookBub, but it's different because the BookBub thing where it was they did it in certain countries, that's bigger. And this, it was BookBub. It's a deal that I had going. It was just the day, 3 days ago, and it didn't move the needle at all. You just don't know. I activated a promotion on Amazon. Like, well, it's almost September. Like, maybe I should, you know, get this
one. Right.
And nothing changed.
You only have until September.
Right. Actually, then it's going forever. It's kidding, it's still there. So it just takes so much. And then getting the books in stores, consignment stuff, because it's just you. You don't have a publisher. You don't have, you know, someone paying for you to go on a book tour or to get original stuff or get, you know, prime spacing in the bookstore kind of thing. I wanted to try to do a reading here in town. But because of COVID, they stopped that at this one bookstore in West Carolina. I was thinking about doing it. And it was on hold. And so I kind of put that on the back burner as well. But then again, it's like, well, what do I do then? Like, you know, I have to like, everybody come to West Hollywood. I mean, West Hollywood is very central. It's not like that. But it's like, come to the thing, come to my thing, listen to my thing, buy my book.
So it looks you got to be that person
for the bookstore because they want to sell copies. That's the whole point. And I'm just like, like, where does it end? I'm the only one doing it. I have to take care of all this. I'd probably have to get a poster made, like a thing to have stood up and it's tiring, but it's what you have to do. You have to market yourself, not just to sell copies, to make money. Just to make it a success, to make money, I guess, but to reach people, get it done how you want it done. It's all on you. Unless, you know, you published by, you know, Simon & Schuster or something, in which case, you're...
Yeah. Well, even if you do get published by a traditional house, unless you're like that 1%, it's all still on you. They don't do any of that.
Oh, I didn't know that. So if you're a star, they'll invest in you.
Yeah, if you're J.K. Rowling, they'll do your marketing for you. But if you're everybody else, hey, you got to do it too. Like, they're not bringing that much to the table these days.
Oh, that's disappointing. I mean, that's another job. Disappointing. Right? Mm-hmm. Ish.
Well, yeah.
You got to be in it for the long haul. That's a big part of it. Mm-hmm.
And that's something I feel like a lot of, especially new authors, don't understand that. Yes, you have to write the story, which is hard, but then you also got to do all the other stuff on the other side, all of it.
And also just the writing of it. I was talking to a friend years ago and he gave me this manuscript and it was astonishingly bad. And I told him that in far kinder terms. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I just can't work in this anymore. I'm just going to send it to agents. It's like, that's not how this goes.
Yeah, no, you got to make that as good as you can. Right. Or they're just going to pass it by.
You can't just get tired of it. I mean, I get it. You burned out on it. That means you either work on another project, you do other projects, you just live your life for a little bit, come back to it when you're fresh. Like, it takes a lot of time and a lot of drafts. It rather than a very, 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 very shitty first draft.
Everybody's first draft is crappy.
Right. It was very crappy for even one of those. It was bad. And I was like, but it takes so much work. And then the editing, if you can, before you hire someone to edit it, you need to. And it's your own work, which makes it even harder because you're already so close to it. You can't see it necessarily. And yeah, it takes so much work. It takes just to get it. And then, you know, if you're doing it yourself, you have to cover design. You have to have them do the layout. You have to approve all this stuff. And I think because I worked in publishing for so long, I think the interior designer was not expecting all of the notes. I had so many notes. And I could tell he was a little frustrated. I gave him a huge tip when we were dying. But it was like, we can't have orphans. There's an orphan here. It's like, no, that's okay. I'm like, it's not okay.
Right. No, you need to tie all this up.
And I ended up going through and doing it myself for some reason, not because he wasn't going to do it. It wasn't that. There was something, I can't remember, but I was like, I'll fix it. And I went through and got rid of every single one. Because I having worked in publishing, I know how to type in text, not dramatically.
Right. And like a little bit of OCD on your part, you just had to clean it up.
It just doesn't look right. We wouldn't allow that in any of the magazines or the books. That's not industry standard. Until I was frustrated. I even told him I worked in publishing. Like, it doesn't mean I know everything about this, but I know a lot more than people who haven't.
Right.
And most people who come to you haven't. Because most people haven't. Mm-hmm. Even
other industries. Right. Yeah, I suppose they're coming to you because you have the fountain of knowledge and maybe they don't expect that. But yeah, they have to expect something coming back from you that you're going to know more than they do, I guess.
Right. Because also, regardless, it's like, it has to be what I want. Even if I don't know what I'm talking about, which is really horrible on the other end for the designer, it's like,
what they're talking about.
That would be even worse. But still, up and be like, okay, we'll make the font, you know, 18 point or whatever, you know. But he did a great job. He did things to it I would have never even thought about. He was very good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the cover design was magnificent.
All right. We need to start winding down. We're going to hit our hour mark here soon. So just to close out, so where can listeners buy the book? Add to your sales tag.
Okay. You can find it on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Kobo is by far the easiest to launch it on, and it may be because it was the last one I launched it on, so I had all the pieces in place by that point.
Okay.
But the physical one is paperback. It sells for $10.99 on Amazon. It's generally $1.99 for the digital at all of the platforms. I fluctuate with that a little bit sometimes on because of the BookBub, the deals. They want it to be a deal. So I...
Okay. So you have to inflate it on one end to make it a deal.
And then they're like, bring it back down, take it down to $1.99. What a steal. You know, so it might be a little higher. Right. We'll see how it goes. If it's a little higher, it means I'm going to apply to BookBub again. And it's best, I find, to look up my name.
Okay.
Until in September are common enough. Things will come up and mine might get lost. So if you look up Parker Jones, H-A-R-K-E-R, not Parker with a P, Parker with an H, it comes up right, it comes up right away. I think I might be wrong. Okay. I don't know, but it comes up right away.
And where can they connect with you online in case they want to write you another fan letter or just catch you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter at Parker Jones, just my name.
Nice. That's who feels like a steal.
I know. I was excited. And then Instagram, I'm Parker_J. Super simple. Facebook/Parker Juice. Juice is my college nickname. So I'm sure you just look up Parker Jones and you'll find me. I assume URL, Facebook.com/, but yeah.
All right. Well, this has been entertaining, enlightening. This has been awesome. Thank you so much for being
on. Thank you so much for having me. This has been really lovely.
Read and Write Podcast is edited and produced by Deborah Z. Barth. Music was provided by Lo-Fi Girl and can be found at lofigirl.com or on their YouTube channel. Audio effects were created by Red Octopus and Black River Phonogram. Show notes and previous episodes can be found at readandwritepodcast.com. And that's it. Thank you for listening to the show. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate Read and Write on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you have a suggestion for a future episode, drop me a line. I'm always open to suggestions. Also, did you know that Read and Write publishes 3 episodes a week? Check out the podcast's YouTube channel for Write With Me Mondays live streams and 30-second book reviews on Fridays.